The Kite Runner, Disc 9.
They removed the chest tube early the next morning, and Armand gave the staff the go-ahead to let me sip apple juice. I asked Aisha for a mirror when she placed a cup of juice on the dresser next to my bed. She lifted her bifocals to her forehead as she pulled the curtain open and let the morning sun flood the room. "Remember now," she said over her shoulder. "It will look better in a few days." My son-in-law was in a moped accident last year. His handsome face was dragged on the asphalt and became purple like an eggplant. Now he is beautiful again, like a Lollywood movie star. Despite her reassurances, looking in the mirror and seeing the thing that insisted it was my face left me a little breathless. It looked like someone had stuck an air pump nozzle under my skin and had pumped away. My eyes were puffy and blue. The worst of it was my mouth, a grotesque blob of purple and red, all bruises and stitches. I tried to smile and a bolt of pain ripped through my lips. I wouldn't be doing that for a while. There were stitches across my left cheek, just under the chin, on the forehead just below the hairline. The old guy with the leg cast said something in Urdu. I gave him a shrug and shook my head. He pointed to his face, patted it, and grinned a wide, toothless grin. "Very good," he said in English. "Inshallah." "Thank you," I whispered. Farid and Sohrab came in just as I put the mirror away. Sohrab took his seat on the stool and rested his head on the bed's handlebars. "You know, the sooner we get you out of here, the better," Farid said. "Well, Dr. Farooqi says," I began. "I don't mean the hospital, I mean Peshawar," Farid said. "Why?" "I don't think you'll be safe here for long." He lowered his voice. "The Taliban have friends here. They will start looking for you." "I think they already may have," I murmured. I thought suddenly of the bearded man who had wandered into the room and just stood there staring at me. Farid leaned in. "As soon as you can walk, I'll take you to Islamabad. Not entirely safe there either. No place in Pakistan is, but it's better than here. At least it will buy you some time." "Faridjan," I said, "this can't be safe for you either. Maybe you should not be seen with me. You have a family to take care of." Farid made a waving gesture. "My boys are young, but they're very shrewd. They know how to take care of their mothers and sisters." He smiled. "Besides, I didn't say I would do it for free." "I wouldn't let you if you offered," I said. I forgot I couldn't smile and tried. A tiny streak of blood trickled down my chin. "Can I ask you for one more favor?" I said. "For you, 1,000 times over," Farid said. And just like that, I was crying. I hitched gusts of air, tears gushing down my cheeks, stinging the raw flesh of my lips. "What's the matter?" Farid said, alarmed. I buried my face in one hand and held up the other. I knew the whole room was watching me. After, I felt tired, hollow. "I'm sorry," I said. Sohrab was looking at me with a frown creasing his brow. When I could talk again, I told Farid what I needed. "Rahim Khan said they live here in Peshawar," I said. "Maybe you should write down their names," Farid said, eyeing me cautiously, as if wondering what might set me off next. I scribbled their names on a scrap of paper towel: John and Betty Caldwell. Farid pocketed the folded piece of paper. "I will look for them as soon as I can," he said. He turned to Sohrab. "As for you, I'll pick you up this evening. Don't tire Amir Agha too much." But Sohrab had wandered to the window, where a half dozen pigeons strutted back and forth on the sill, pecking at wood and scraps of